Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has three matters on today's oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are Harris County and Carl Borchers versus Faye Sykes, individually and as next friend of Trenard Battle, from Harris County and the 1st Appellate District. In Re Entergy Corporation and others, a petition for writ of mandamus, and In Re Kansas City Southern Industries Incorporated, also a petition for writ of mandamus. In each matter, the petitioners or relators have been given 20 minutes, as have the respondents, to present oral argument. Petitioners and relators may take a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of our court. And we will, of course, take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument. One of our seats on the court is vacant because of Justice Enoch's resignation. And in the Harris County case, Justice Schneider is not sitting because he was on the Court of Appeals panel that wrote the decision that we are reviewing today. The court is now ready to hear argument from petitioners in Harris County versus Sykes.
Please the court. My name is Michael Hall. I'm an assistant Harris County attorney. I represent Harris County in this appeal, as well as Major Carl Borchers. This is a case alleging that the respondent's decedent was housed with an inmate with tuberculosis, and while housed there, he caught some sort of disease that killed him, a pulmonary infection that killed him, despite the fact that he did not have TB. Petitioners asked the court to address two issues. The first issue is whether the Court of Appeals erred when it held that any dismissal through a plea of the jurisdiction should be a dismissal without prejudice as opposed to a dismissal with prejudice. There are several reasons why the trial court correctly dismissed Harris County through the plea of the jurisdiction with prejudice.
But let me ask you, if you dismiss with prejudice, doesn't that then presume that you could never go get legislative consent to sue? It would close that avenue completely.
Well, Your Honor, the rule we're asking the court to adopt today is that if the jurisdictional problem can't be fixed, then it should be a dismissal with prejudice. For example, if legislative consent can be gotten, or administrative remedies can be exhausted, or the case becomes ripe, or anything like that, repleting.
How can you say that there's no way they could go get legislative consent? I mean, if you dismiss with prejudice, you're precluding them from seeking legislative consent.
The legislature has spoken in the Tort Claims Act, and legislative consent is not a way.
But they can go get special consent from the legislature. That's not the only way the legislature can waive immunity.
Under the Tort Claims Act, you're saying, Your Honor?
Well, my understanding is they can petition the legislature to waive immunity in a particular case. And by dismissing with prejudice, you preclude them from seeking that specific consent rather than the generic Tort Claims Act waiver.
Well, I would say if they're able to come forth with some indication to the trial court that that's what they intend to do, then the trial court should dismiss without prejudice. I mean, the plaintiff can easily satisfy that burden, and if the trial court makes a mistake and dismisses with prejudice, simply file a motion to modify the judgment and explain to the trial court, you've made a mistake and this is why. I can fix this jurisdictional problem.
So are you saying that if that avenue is available, if the legislature has not in that specific case consented or said they're not going to consent, then that avenue is open and the trial court should dismiss without prejudice?
I'm saying where it's clear that the possibility of fixing the jurisdictional defect, that the trial court should dismiss without prejudice. I'm not sure I agree with you, Your Honor, that individual plaintiffs can go to the legislature and seek individual, that would be a special law under the Constitution. I don't think that's permissible.
Well, what do you mean in the brief at page 5 should be with prejudice, dismissal should be with prejudice unless the plaintiff may at least in theory satisfy some condition that would waive, i.e. seek legislative consent to sue? What does that mean?
Well, Your Honor, I'm saying that if the jurisdictional defect can be fixed, dismissal should be without prejudice. And, for example, one of them is
well,
sequel...
What does legislative consent to sue mean? Doesn't that mean going to the legislature and getting consent to sue?
Sure it does, Your Honor, but the Tort Claims Act does not allow that.
The Tort Claims Act doesn't allow anybody to go to the legislature and ask for consent to sue?
I've never seen that happen. I've never seen that in the Act, Your Honor.
Well, could the plaintiffs go to the Harris County Commissioner's Court and seek a resolution or some type of ordinance that would allow them to bring this case and instruct your office not to file summary judgment or a dilatory plea, or not to file a dilatory plea?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because it's an immunity from suit, and the Commissioner's Court can definitely waive immunity from liability, but maybe they could, maybe they couldn't, but that's not our facts. Our facts are that he doesn't come under the Tort Claims Act. He cannot come under the Tort Claims Act under clearly established law. Under this court's precedent in Dallas County Mental Health and Mental Retardation versus Bosley, Texas Department of Criminal Justice versus Miller, there's no way his claims could have come under the Tort Claim Act.
I'm just trying to understand what you meant in the brief. Seek legislative consent to sue, and you say you mean amend the Tort Claims Act.
No, I did not say that.
Well, seek legislative consent to sue? That's what I'm not clear about.
I was just giving an example, Your Honor. The cases that I read most often are contract cases prior to Chapter 2260, the government code, being enacted. People who had a contract claim against the government had to go to the legislature and seek permission to sue. If not, the claim was barred, jurisdictionally barred. However, it was a dismissal with prejudice. I believe that, or without prejudice. I believe that's the right result. However, under the 2260 and under the Tort Claims Act, I'm not aware of any avenue where you can go around those acts to go to the legislature in individual cases.
If you could, would your argument be different? I mean, if you could, then you're faced with a real dilemma about dismissing with prejudice, because presume with me that you can do that. Then always that avenue is theoretically available, if not in reality. And so by dismissing with prejudice, you would be cutting off that avenue.
Well, if I were to presume that, Your Honor, I'd also presume the legislature could step in and revive the cause of action. I mean, if they're willing to go to that extreme to allow a cause of action to proceed for one person, they could similarly revive the cause of action in some way in the same act. So, I mean, it's just an extreme. I can't see it happening, but if it did happen, the legislature could somehow create the cause of action anew if they wanted to.
Well, that's one question I had. For decades, this court has urged the legislature to revisit the Tort Claims Act and to amend it. What if it were to actually do that? What would that do to outstanding claims that had been dismissed with prejudice, that limitations had not expired on?
Well, again, the legislature could step in and revive those claims. They generally haven't done that. When they enacted the Tort Claims Act, they specifically with premise defects, they said anything that was built before the enactment of the Act, we're not going to make it come under the Act. So it sounds to me like the legislature isn't going to do any sort of retroactive action like that. But
But all this debate, I gather under your second argument, you say is irrelevant, or at least it can become so, because you say that a dismissal without prejudice is still a judgment under the language of the Tort Claims Act.
I believe that's true, Your Honor.
So would you address that for a little bit, so in case we can't get out of the quagmire we're digging?
Yes, Your Honor, I will. The first reason that the Court of Appeals erred when they held that a dismissal for want of jurisdiction is not a judgment under 101-106, the first reason that shouldn't be the case is because the plain language of the statute is so broad. The statute simply says a judgment. It doesn't say a judgment on the merits. It doesn't say dismissal with or without prejudice. It just says a judgment. In Bosley, this court said specifically the immunity conveyed to a governmental unit's employees by Section 101-106 is triggered by any judgment in an action against a governmental unit, including a judgment in favor of the governmental unit. And the court emphasized any. I think the judgment is that broad, and at the time Bossley was written, this court looked at it that way, and I think that's the right way to look at it.
But haven't we typically seen judgments as disposing of the merits of the case rather than jurisdictional or other procedural reasons?
Well, Your Honor, I don't see a distinction. I know the court generally says a summary judgment disposing of a case is demands a dismissal with prejudice because it's on the merits. But if you file if you assert your immunity from suit, your sovereign immunity, your governmental immunity through a summary judgment, you're looking. The court would be looking at the same jurisdictional evidence, the same jurisdictional arguments. There's absolutely no difference. And by definition, the trial court can't, in a summary judgment, look at the merits of the action because it doesn't have jurisdiction. So I don't see real. It's a distinction without a difference. A motion for summary judgment and a plea to the jurisdiction. You start.
Are you saying the county could not file a valid motion for summary judgment in response to this lawsuit?
Oh, certainly they could, Your Honor.
In other words, they could waive their assertion of a lack of jurisdiction to the extent of filing a motion for summary judgment.
Well, that seems to be the law right now, Your Honor.
And that would marshal essentially the same type of proof you bring on a plea to jurisdiction, and if you succeeded in that, it would leave no doubt that Mr. Borchers was immune from suit. If your primary concern is your employees, as you seem to suggest in the brief.
Yes, there'd be no doubt that Harris County was immune from suit eventually. However, we waive, if we do that, we waive our right to an interlocutory appeal under 51014A8, and that leads to inefficiencies for the governmental entities, especially smaller governmental entities, where they basically are forced then to defend two suits.
Is that the principal reason governmental units assert immunity through a plea to the jurisdiction so that if it's denied, they can appeal?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
You said a moment ago that the trial court couldn't look at the merits of the case. Why is it then that you filed, in conjunction with your plea to the jurisdiction, evidence that the co-inmate didn't die from tuberculosis?
To show, basically, referring back to Bland ISD versus Blue, the court recognized that in the past it's always allowed jurisdictional evidence to come in to show sham pleadings. And essentially, that's what that goes to. It's a sham pleading. He didn't die from tuberculosis.
So you say the trial court could have looked at that evidence in deciding whether to grant the jurisdiction. Did you allege a sham pleading? Did you allege that the plaintiff's pleading was a sham in order to get the trial court to recognize jurisdiction?
Frankly, Your Honor, I don't know if those specific words were used or not.
But
I
do
know
the trial court could have considered that evidence in determining the plea in this case. I know that's not the issue here.
I believe they could, Your Honor.
You believe that under Bland, the only way to consider that evidence under a plea is if the pleadings are alleged to be a sham, or only the monetary jurisdiction amounts are alleged to be a sham?
Well, whatever it is you need to get in the court, whatever jurisdictional basis you need to get in the court, whether it's a waiver under the Tort Claims Act 101.021, or whether it's the court's jurisdictional limits, whatever it is, I believe the evidence that's permissible is the evidence that would show that it's a sham, or that it's sham's a harsh word, but it's just not true. That the jurisdictional pleadings just aren't true, and I believe evidence can be used for that. We have to have some faith in the trial court that he's going to use the proper evidence to, you know, attack whatever particular elements of the jurisdiction were attacked.
But in this case, there was no evidence that the evidence was met with the summary judgment. Where this decision was entirely
I believe the autopsy report may have gone in with the plea to the jurisdiction, but I don't remember off the top of my head, Your Honor.
That's in the record?
Yes, it is in the record. I'll file a supplemental brief and point out where it's in the record, Your Honor. Another reason why 101-106 should be read broadly is the policy reasons behind 101-106. As the court pointed out in Bossley, the legislature took several attempts at enacting the Tort Claims Act and four acts before Governor Smith finally, over a two-year period before Governor Smith finally signed it. His problem was he needed it narrower and narrower. Part of the enactment was a compromise where individual employees who normally are subject to liability under the common law would basically, the deal was if you want to go after the government, you sacrifice the individuals. And you make a choice, you make an election. And an election comes under 101, 106 when the judgment comes in. And it doesn't matter what kind of judgment. And the election is made for you under 101, 106 when that judgment comes in. And again, the legislature didn't try to pick and choose between which kind of judgments. When the plaintiff lets the government go to judgment by whatever means or however the judgment ends up, he loses the suit under 101, 106 against the individuals. That's supported by strong policy reasons. One of the points we made earlier was it's inefficient for the government to forego its statutory right to an interlocutory appeal simply to assert the 101, 101, 106 derivative immunity for the employee, which clearly is contrary to the intent of the act. If the court doesn't have any more questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May I please the court? My name is Okoh Nusoro, and I represent the respondents, Faith Sides, and the child, Trinidad Ballard. In all of this, I am reminded of the decision by the Austin Court of Appeals in the case of Liberty Mutual Insurance Company v. Sharp, which says, a court's jurisdiction is conferred by the Constitution and the statute. A court without jurisdiction cannot render a valid judgment. The facts of the case are straightforward, and they have not essentially been controverted by Harris County. Judge Sykes was issued a blue warrant because he left the state of Texas while he was on probation. And when he returned back to the state and tried to get a driver's license, he was arrested by DPS and taken to Harris County. In Harris County, he was kept next to an inmate that had tuberculosis. Even Harris County's own medical reports show that Mr. Sykes was exposed to tuberculosis. Well, after that, he developed a lot of breathing problems and eventually died.
Mr. Soro, let me ask you about your citation to the Office of Court of Appeal regarding a court lacking subject matter jurisdiction. As you stated, that court would then not be able to render a judgment on the merits.
Yes, Justice. No, Justice.
Why not?
A plea to jurisdiction is basically a statement. Let me answer that by taking us back to the origin of the word plea. It comes from the Latin word placere, meaning to beg, please. Now, when an inmate appears before a judge, he pleads. When a case appears before an immigration judge, the respondent pleads. So So we see that plea is a preliminary action in a case. It does not go to the merits. The Bowman Court of Appeals in Lamar University v. Doe stated that a plea to the jurisdiction does not go to the merits of the case. Summary judgment goes to the merits of the case. So in this instance here, government action in asking for a plea to the jurisdiction is to beg the court to say, Judge, you can touch us. We these people can't reach us because we are immune. It doesn't go to the merits of the case itself. So under these facts, the government is the immunity is not the same as
So your position now is that you have and you do not now have and you never had a valid claim against Harris County.
No, I never said that.
Okay.
We do have a valid claim against Harris County.
So you think that so the relief you're asking for is not merely to be able to proceed against Mr. Borchers, but it's to have your at the appropriate time a review of the action favorable to Harris County.
Well, the relief we're asking for, first of all, the first court of appeals send the case back to the trial court to dismiss Harris County or grant Harris County's plea to the jurisdiction without prejudice. So we believe we can go back and refile the case against Harris County if we can.
Okay, so but as it's now pled, do you admit you did not state a valid claim against Harris County based on the last pleadings you had in the trial court?
No, I do not admit that. But you're not
filing a cross appeal here complaining of that part of the Court of Appeals ruling?
No, I did not. I believe that if Carl Borchers is held responsible for what happened to Mr. Sykes, Harris County can indemnify him, and it's still a case against Harris
County.
Well,
I'm just trying to get the posture of the claim now. We're really only looking at whether or not you have a right to proceed against Carl Borchers at this point, correct?
Yes.
And you're not claiming here that you have a right to proceed against Harris County at this time on these pleadings?
No, there comes a point where you have to say, well, what is practical to do at this point? We're not going to pursue the case against Harris County. But we do believe that if the case against Carl Borchers proceeds, as the First Court of Appeals has directed, a claim against Borchers is essentially the same a claim against Harris County.
So if you had not made the initial claim against Harris County, if your only defendant had been Carl Borchers, we wouldn't be here today.
I don't think so, Justice, because I didn't bring this court here today. Harris County did. What Harris County is saying...
Well, we wouldn't have been in the Court of Appeals.
Harris County is saying because they receive a plea to the jurisdiction against Harris County, that Mr. Borchers is entitled to derivative immunity when they filed a motion for summary judgment. That's why we're here. Perhaps if they had filed a motion for summary judgment on behalf of Harris County and then on behalf of Borchers, we may not be here today.
We have been struggling over time on what to do with the Tort Claims Act in terms of jurisdiction, because it seems to us, I think, that at times, whether you have the right to sue and whether liability has been waived is coextensive with the merits. For example, if there were a dispute about whether a county employee were actually driving a truck that hit someone, you wouldn't know till the end of the jury trial, was he driving the truck or not? And if the jury found he was not driving the truck, there would be no waiver of immunity and no waiver to suit. And so what judgment would be entered at the end of that jury trial when the merits are coextensive with the jurisdictional issue?
Well, I believe that if a case goes to trial and the government entity receives a favorable judgment, in that instance, perhaps immunity applies to the to the employee of the government entity.
I'm just saying, what, let's say you proceeded against the county as well, and the, but the jury found that the employee was not driving the truck, that somebody else was, and that therefore the county's not liable, but there's also no waiver of the right to sue in that case because there was no use by a county employee of a vehicle. So there was no, at the end of it, we see that there was no waiver under the Tort Claims Act because there was no employee involved using a vehicle. So is the judgment that's rendered by the trial court, is that a dismissal for want of jurisdiction with prejudice, without prejudice? Is it a judgment on the merits? You see where I'm coming from?
Yes, Justice. That is something that the government entity has to decide on. If they decide that the judgment should be on the merits, then they file the judgment to the trial court. If they decide that the judgment has to be on the issue of jurisdiction, then that's what they file to the trial court. In this case, though, it's a little different because Harris County filed a plea to the jurisdiction and then wants to file a summary judgment in the interest of the employee. It's two different animals.
That's what I think we're struggling with. If it's the same facts, what precludes the county from litigating those same facts in a plea to the jurisdiction in front of the trial court? And why would the judgment be any different depending on whether it's raised in a plea to the jurisdiction or it's at the end of a fact-finding where a judgment's rendered?
Well, the judgment is different in this instance because we assume that the government entity has gone through discovery, has taken depositions, and then submits a judgment to the trial court and gets a judgment. That is different from the plea. The plea says, you can't touch me. You can't touch me because I'm a government entity. In that case, you're telling the court, you do not have jurisdiction to enter judgment against you, against me. You cannot then move forward to the next phase and say, well, remember, when it was Harris County, you couldn't touch Harris County. But because it's the employee, you now could touch the employee with a summary judgment.
Let's say in the plea to the jurisdiction, under my example, the county files a motion saying, dismiss this. Our employee wasn't driving the truck, and they submit an affidavit of the employee saying, I wasn't driving the truck. And you can't controvert that. Discovery is taken, you can't controvert that. Would it be improper at that point for the trial court to go ahead and dismiss for want of jurisdiction?
Yes, it would not be proper, for a trial court to dismiss for want of jurisdiction because essentially the whole case has been presented to the trial court. So it's been a case on the merits. It's different from a plea because the plea is just a preliminary. You do not get to the heart of the case or the merits of the case. As they say, you don't have the whole enchilada in front of you. But in the case where there is trial on the merits, the trial court has jurisdiction to enter judgment on the merits because at this point, it's too late for a plea.
Mr. Sotar, the derivative immunity statute seems to contemplate the plaintiff has an election. The plaintiff can either sue the county and the employee, or it can just sue the employee. But if it chooses to go against the county and the employee, then the employee's liability is going to depend upon the outcome for the county. Would you agree that that's sort of the scheme underlying the derivative immunity statute?
Yes, Justice.
And if that is the scheme, then it seems that the Court of Appeals opinion here would always undermine that. How do if the employee's liability should be derivative of what happens to the county, then isn't that directly opposed to what the Court of Appeals did here?
Well, the problem with what happened in this case is that Harris County chose to go with a plea to the jurisdiction. And if Harris County, as has been stated before, had simply taken one step further and file a motion for summary judgment and got a result in its favor. And
I guess my question is, putting the form aside for the moment,
yes,
the purpose is whatever, if the two are in the same suit, county and employee, and county is dismissed, either on the merits or not on the merits, so goes the employee. That seems to be the scheme. And so if you are focusing on the form of the dismissal as to the county entity, doesn't that undermine the scheme that the legislature seems to be putting forward?
Well, I disagree because in the legislature has all the infinite wisdom in the world. They could have made that the case here. But the language of 101.106 says if a government entity receives a judgment or settlement in its favor, the case is barred against the government employee. So the focal question then is a plea a judgment? No matter what scheme is out there, if a plea is not a judgment in favor of the government entity, then the government employee is not entitled to derivative immunity.
And why is it? They won.
No, they did not win, Justice.
They didn't?
They didn't win, I'm sorry. They didn't win. They said, you can't touch me.
Well, to win.
Well, it's different. It's if two boxers are engaged in a fight, and one boxer comes up and says, you can't touch me.
He wins.
Well, let me ask, this is what's troubling me. The trial court in this case granted the plea to the jurisdiction filed by Harris County, and you appealed that decision to the Court of Appeals, did you not? You complained about that to the Court of Appeals. Then why wasn't that action by the trial court a judgment for purposes of Rule 101 of Section 101.106? If you could complain about it, if it had enough finality that you could complain about it to the Court of Appeals, why shouldn't we treat that as a judgment under the language of the statute?
Well, I don't think it really has a finality because a plea to the jurisdiction basically is you can appeal that using the as an interlocutory appeal. The difference between the plea and the summary judgment, there's so many, many differences. If you allow me to go through them quickly, the appeal on a plea is interlocutory. The one for summary judgment is on the merits. On the plea, you say the court has no jurisdiction. On the summary judgment, the court has jurisdiction. Now, review of a plea is de novo. On summary judgment is on the merits.
Counsel, what if the same holding was made by the trial court on the summary judgment instead of on the plea to the jurisdiction? Then would you say it's a judgment final as to Section 101.106?
I'm sorry, Justice. That is assuming that Harris County had filed a motion for summary judgment and got the
summary judgment. Summary judgment rather than by plea to the jurisdiction. And as you know, evidence can be, when necessary, considered under a plea. Some respects it may be similar to a summary judgment. But if this ruling had been made, the same ruling in summary judgment, would that be a judgment, in your opinion, under Section 101.106?
Well, that would be a judgment. But the difference with that scenario and this scenario is that Harris County submitted no evidence to the trial court on the plea. They raised their hand and said, you can't touch us.
Well, that's not correct. I talked there as evidence that they submitted, as we discussed in the petitioner's argument, evidence that tuberculosis was not the cause of that inmate's death in conjunction with the plea to jurisdiction.
No, they submitted evidence in the motion for summary judgment. They submitted the authority report in their motion for summary judgment, as I recall it.
Okay, it was not part of their plea to jurisdiction.
No, the plea to the jurisdiction was simply a two-page document that says, you can't touch me, I'm immune from lawsuit. And they move on to summary judgment for Carl Borchardt. They submitted the autopsy report from the medical examiner's office and said, well, we are entitled to derivative immunity.
Okay. So again, if the same ruling is made by summary judgment, assuming the same document was filed, two-page document, that's what it was, as you've indicated, and filed as a summary judgment with no evidence, assume it's a 166 AI motion, and the same ruling is then made, is that a judgment, as the term is used, in your opinion, under 101.106? In other words, same ruling, change the vehicle pursuant to which the ruling was made.
Well, I don't know if I understand. You're saying, suppose Harris County got a summary judgment and then filed summary judgment for Mr. Butcher? Is that what happened?
Assume the trial court held that there was no subject matter jurisdiction pursuant to the summary judgment rather than pursuant to the plea to the jurisdiction.
Well, then, if the trial court said there's no subject matter jurisdiction, it brings us back to the same issue. Then they cannot issue a valid judgment. They cannot issue a valid judgment in that scenario. They cannot then issue a valid judgment as to Borchardt because Harris County is claiming derivative immunity for Mr. Borchardt.
Yeah, but counsel, didn't you spend some time a few minutes ago explaining to us how a summary judgment was different from a plea, suggesting that a summary judgment was went to the merits as opposed to a plea, which was early on in the lawsuit? Or were you, was I misreading you there?
Well, I guess so. But your scenario is a little different, Justice. You're saying if the trial court grants summary judgment and says, I do not have subject matter jurisdiction, that means the trial court can't act on the case. If you don't have subject matter jurisdiction, it cannot render a valid judgment. In that instance, then, derivative immunity as to Carl Borchardt do not apply because there was no subject matter jurisdiction from the beginning, and so we cannot get derivative immunity for Mr. Borchardt.
Well, would you agree that our task here is one of statutory interpretation on this second issue under 101.106? That is, what is, in the words of the statute, quote, a judgment, close quote? That's our task here, correct?
Yes, Justice. The task is a plea to a jurisdiction, a judgment.
Right. And you're saying that the ruling on the plea to the jurisdiction is not a judgment.
Yes, Justice.
Okay. And what guidance would you give us to define a judgment as something other than, on its face, a judgment from the trial court?
Well, I'd like to point the court to Lamar University v. Doe. For 1 minute there, I was excited that the cities on I-10, we are basically going the same way. Lamar University versus Doe says, and that's a Bowman case, by the way, says...
So our court has never addressed this issue?
I think the court has gone around it in some way, but it hasn't hit this issue on the head.
Okay.
I was thinking that I-10 cities, Court of Appeals, were essentially doing the same thing, because Bowman says it's a plea is not a judgment on the merits. First Court of Appeals says a plea is not a judgment on the merits. Then we go to San Antonio in the matter of Liu v. City of San Antonio, and it's a different situation. As I was looking at San Antonio, I found that downtown San Antonio is located on I-35, and so they're basically going with Waco. It's an I-10 thing and an I-35 issue. We ask that this court find that. So it's the battle of the I-10 and the I-35.
I see.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Justice.
If I may answer a few of your questions, Justice Wainwright. First of all, the autopsy report was included with the plea of the jurisdiction. It's at tab F in the appendix to the petition for review. Second of all, your question was if the sovereign immunity or governmental immunity from suit was asserted through a summary judgment as opposed to a plea to the jurisdiction, would 101-106 apply? According to this court, in an opinion issued 5 days ago, it does. 101-106 does bar it. The thing that's worth pointing out, though, and that was the Merck versus Shealy case, what's worth pointing out, though, that case was a summary judgment. They raised the same jurisdictional arguments as they would have in a plea to the jurisdiction. They raised the same jurisdictional facts, you know, whether they put them in or not. They could have put both, whether in a plea to the jurisdiction or a summary judgment. The fact of the matter is, as we traditionally think of a case decided on the merits, that case was not decided on the merits. The Shealy case was not decided on the merits because there was no negation of an essential element of a claim. There was no affirmative defense. There was no trial on the merits. That's trial disposing of all the issues and parties. Those are the types of things that we typically think of as a judgment on the merits. And that wasn't done in that case, and yet this court applied 101-106, reversed the Court of Appeals, and rendered judgment for an individual defendant merely 5 days ago. The Court of Appeals in this case held, with regard to the second issue, a dismissal for want of jurisdiction is not a judgment on the merits of a cause of action. Under your case, under the Supreme Court's case decided just 5 days ago, the Merck case, that's wrong. Because the first Court of Appeals would say never would a dismissal for want of jurisdiction satisfy 101-106 and derivative immunity. And that's plainly wrong under Merck. I asked the court to go a step further because the same evidence, jurisdictional evidence, the same arguments will be used in the plea of the jurisdiction to apply the same reasoning and the same conclusions and dismiss Major Borchers from this case.
What do we do about intentional torts? Let's suppose the plaintiff sues the county and a county employee, and the county gets summary judgment because it's determined it was an intentional tort, and under the facts, the county's not liable. Does that mean that the employee is also entitled to immunity under 101.6?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And Merck reaffirms that. The lower courts have held, and that's, I believe, Merck, because it was it's the same argument. It's an immunity from suit argument, and it was through a summary judgment, so Merck would clearly apply.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals suggests that in a plea to the jurisdiction circumstance that the government has a duty to specially accept. And I understand in this case plaintiff did amend, had the opportunity to amend, and did amend. But let's assume that didn't happen and there was no special exceptions submitted. Comment on the Court of Appeals' indication that there should be a duty by the government to specially accept before there can be a dismissal of prejudice.
Well, if the law is, there's a possibility of amending the plea, then there's a duty by all parties to specially accept. In this case, there was the Court of Appeals brief spent a great deal.
Do you think it would have been your duty to specially accept before being able to obtain a dismissal with prejudice?
No, I don't believe that at all. We didn't need to specially accept in this case, and the Court of Appeals brief that I filed, or the appellee's brief in the Court of Appeals, had quite a bit of authority saying that where it would be futile or useless to specially accept, no matter what he did to amend his pleadings, he couldn't waive, it couldn't fix him to bring jurisdiction in the trial court, then there's no point in specially accepting. And
What if there is an opportunity to amend to state a claim? The government sees that, the plaintiff sees that. Who has a duty to specially accept?
The party moving for dismissal, whether it's the government or a private party.
And what's the source of that duty, counsel?
Case law.
Case law?
Yes, Your Honor. In conclusion, I'd just like to say the Court of Appeals erred when it held that the case must be dismissed without prejudice when dismissed through a plea of jurisdiction. When the jurisdictional defect can't be remedied, the case should be dismissed with prejudice. A good example of what can happen to a government is today, where the respondent said that he intends to refile against Harris County and will defend yet again. Also, the Court of Appeals erred when it held that a judgment under 101-106 must be a judgment on the merits. Simply because a jurisdictional argument is raised in a summary judgment should not make the judgment any more or less a judgment on the merits than if it were raised in the plea of the jurisdiction. It just doesn't make sense logically. Also, the statute is so broad, and this court has construed in dictum, the statute very broadly, and I think the court should continue to do so now in order to uphold the policies and of the Act of 101-106.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will now take a brief recess.